You will. Okay, so welcome to our third day of classes. We are going to start, as we have every day, with Cane Travel, and we're going to turn it over to Winfred to take over.
Okay, so good afternoon where you guys, good morning where we are. Yes, so again, I'm Winfred Haynes, and my guest instructor today is Joni Martinez. And Joni started her career at the, my internet's acting weird here. She worked as a trainer, in the mobility of, vocational rehabilitation for 9 years. She began her at New Mexico Center for the Blind, and she developed a passion for assistive technology and cane travel. She relocated here to Austin. 2014 is when she got here. She's provided training here at the in the Career Guidance Department, in the Adaptive Skills Department. Technology Department is where she is now. She also worked our outreach field, where we go out for at least a week to take Chris Cole on the road, and they travel to a city, and they set up, and they have students come in, and they do the whole gamut. They do the O&M, cooking, industrial arts, Braille, and within that week of training.
Winfred,
yes?
This is Judy. Who's Chris Cole?
I'm sorry. the Chris Cole Rehabilitation Center. So Chris Cole Rehabilitation Center is the place that we work, and the outreach team are the ones that go out and do the training. Sorry about that.
Yeah. I wanted to meet Chris Cole. I thought we could join him on the road.
Nah, not now.
Okay.
She's I'm going to mention that she is certified through NOMC. She's also an NOMCT, which is she's a trainer. And happy birthday, Joni. Today is Joni's birthday. And so we are, Joni Martinez.
And once again, we're throwing acronyms in them like you know what they are. So what that means for us is that Joni has passed a test indicating that she does know how to teach cane travel, and we're going to find out by listening to her whether she does. There you go, Joni.
Thank you both. And thank you, Winfred, for the birthday wishes.
You're welcome.
Just to add a little bit on, I do work at the Chris Cole Rehabilitation Center here in Austin, Texas. And Chris Cole is a person. He's no longer with us, but he was actually the governor of Texas for a day, I believe, back in the 1970s. And he was blind. And if any of y'all ever want to come and visit, we have a big statue of him out in the front of our front door here. And basically, he made it. He made a piece of legislation during his day as governor, that this center would be specifically for training for people who are blind and visually impaired. So we work at a pretty cool place here. But Winfred is correct. I've been here since 2014. And before that, I worked in New Mexico. And I've been doing O&M ever since. And technology. Those are my two favorite things. So today, I'm going to prove myself, right? We're going to talk a little bit about outdoor travel. And so I know that y'all have had a couple of days already with O&M. And so through the lessons that you've had so far and the discussions, I want you to kind of think about some of the the techniques that you would use to get information from your environment. Okay. So again, I know you've kind of talked about some other O&M basics, but some of those techniques that we use are tactile feedback from our canes. We use sounds that are around us and, you know, sound feedback from our cane tips. We might also have other types of sort of tactile feedback that we find and obstacles around us. So if we find an obstacle and we determine that it's okay to reach out and feel that obstacle, we might, you know, touch that with our hands and figure out what it is from there. And then there's other types of feedback that we can use, like using sort of the sun and feeling where the sun is in the sky to sort of help us determine where we are as far as, or where we're facing as far as cardinal directions are concerned. So there are a lot of different types of environmental cues that we can get when we're outside. Okay. So I kind of want to start with some of the basics. We're going to go to tactile feedback. All right. So the very foundation of our tactile feedback is what we get from our cane. It's our tool, right? So that cane feels things for us. It contacts obstacles so that we don't contact those obstacles with our bodies. And of course, I'm not sure how interactive we are right now, but you know, I'm sure we've all had those moments where we're walking with our cane and somebody says, "Oh, you're going to hit that with your cane. Be careful. You're going to hit that with your cane." And so of course the point of using the cane is that we do tap it with our canes rather than our bodies, right? Winford, do you agree?
Yes, I was muted.
Okay. So of course, you know, the point is that we do contact obstacles with our canes. And so that's indoor, that's outdoor, that's travel in general. That's the point of our cane. It sees for us, it feels things for us. And really in doing so, it becomes an extension of our bodies. So it can, again, feel those things before we do. Okay. So as we're walking, it not only contacts obstacles before we contact them with our bodies, but it also provides tactile feedback from the ground that we're walking on. So what I feel below my cane might be rough. It might be soft. It might be smooth. And based on that, I can tell, am I on a sidewalk? If I'm on a sidewalk, it's probably going to be a little rougher. Or if I'm in a parking lot, it might be rough. If I'm on carpet, well, it's going to be softer. And it might feel smooth if I'm on tile. Okay, so there's the tactile feedback that we get. And of course, when we're walking outside, we might also find things like grass. We might find a curb, which will actually change not just what we're feeling as far as the texture, but what we're feeling as far as the level of something. So of course, if I'm on a curb, if I'm standing on top of the curb, of course, the ground might drop down in front of me, or if I'm standing at the bottom of a curb, it might, you know, move up in front of me. So then I can proceed by stepping up and of course, clearing what's in front of me, clearing, you know, the ground in front of me so I don't take a step into an obstacle. I might also find something, you know, maybe metal. At that point, I know that it could be a grate that I'm walking across, you know, so depending on how something feels and sort of what you feel when you're contacting it with your cane, you can have a better determination of what that might be. Now, not just can you get tactile feedback from your cane tip, but you can also get sound feedback. Okay, so here's another couple examples of how we might use sound to our advantage. If I'm using a metal tip, of course, right? Metal, contacting metal is going to make it a very metallic sound. Metal contacting carpet probably isn't going to sound a whole lot like anything. And then metal contacting wood or tile, of course, is going to have a sound of its own as well. So those are a couple of ways that we can sort of tell what we're walking on, the sort of, you know, ground that we're walking on. So of course, that also then leads into, if I'm walking on tile, I might be in a hallway. If I'm walking in carpet, I may have found the room that I'm looking for, the classroom or the office that I'm looking for. And then, of course, if I find grass, then maybe I'm about to fall off the sidewalk or step off. So as far as sound and tactile cues, and sort of the basic sort of sound and tactile cues that a cane provides, does anyone have questions?
Hello?
Winford? I heard you and then you went away.
Oh, yeah.
There you are.
Yeah, my internet connection's kind of poor.
Okay. All right. So based on sort of the basic tactile and sound cues from a cane, does anyone have questions or comments?
Do you want people? Well, go ahead, Winford. You go first.
I would say let's go a little bit longer, Joni, with, okay. And then we'll go to question and answers.
Because then we can tell them how to raise their hands and all that good
stuff. Yeah.
Okay. No problem. Okay. So then if we build on that, we get more sound information from our environments and again, more tactile. So of course, like I said, if you contact an obstacle or an item with your cane, you can actually make sure, first of all, that it's something that you should be touching, right? So if it's a human, when we contact it with our cane, it might be a little softer. It might not make a ton of noise when you tap it, unless, you know, the human actually speaks up and says hi or excuse me. But of course, we want to make sure that whatever it is that we're touching, we know that it's safe to touch. So of course, we don't want to invade anyone's privacy or personal space. And of course, we want to make sure that we're not going to touch something that's going to harm us. So we, of course, don't want to go up to a very pokey plant or a cactus or, you know, something like that. So generally speaking, you want to contact the item or the obstacle with your cane and then sort of proceed lightly. Okay, you can actually maintain contact with your cane and that obstacle and then walk up to it as you get closer with your cane still in contact. And generally, you're going to approach it with sort of the back of your hand so that you don't hurt yourself again and you have a better idea option of approaching the item in sort of a smaller kind of manner so that as you get closer and you feel more comfortable, then you can sort of expand and feel the item more further and explore it. Okay. So we always want to make sure that we're safe. Of course, that's sort of the number one rule is safety, right? So that allows us to explore things more tactily. Then if we build on that kind of sense of feeling even further, like I sort of talked about earlier, we can actually feel sort of something like the sun, okay, to help us with cardinal directions. So the sun, of course, based on where it is in the sky, can help you develop a better sense of where you are because, of course, it rises in the east and sets in the west. So of course we can sort of determine that in the morning, if we're feeling the sun, it's probably coming from the east. So I know that if I'm feeling the sun on the left side of my face in the morning, then I'm probably facing south because that sun is to the east, okay? So by sort of paying attention to where we feel that warmth coming from, we can kind of determine based on the time of day where the sun might be. And then sort of help orient ourselves that way. So that's sort of another type of feeling that we can get to sort of help us figure out where we are as far as our environmental cues are concerned. Okay. So let's build up. Let's build and kind of talk about sound a little bit more. Okay. So of course we talked about, the cane tap and the sound that it provides. And then, we know that there are several other types of sounds that we hear in our environments, whether we're indoors or outdoors. So outdoors, we might hear things like traffic. We might hear people on the sidewalk. We might hear a bus passing by, even maybe an audio beacon. And so those sounds can help us out quite a bit too. So as far as orientation is concerned, if you know that you work or live on a busy street, or even a street in general, if you hear a car pass by on that street, then you have a good idea of where that street might be in position to you or in relation to you. And then you can position yourself accordingly to either walk toward the street or away from, or even alongside. So if I know that Lamar Boulevard is the street that runs in front of my work building, I can follow it when I leave. I can follow the sound of that street, or at least be aware of the sound of that street when I leave the front door of my office in search of the sidewalk. Okay, so as long as I know that Lamar is where it is, I might need to make a couple of turns to get to the correct sidewalk or to get to the path. But eventually I can use that that traffic as my beacon. Okay, so I can follow that traffic to find the sidewalk. And then of course, as I'm walking down the street, I can of course feel the sidewalk below my feet. I can feel it as my cane moves across, and then I can hear the cane tapping down the sidewalk. But I can also make sure that I'm staying in a straight path by listening to my parallel traffic and keeping it on the side of my body. Okay, so traffic can definitely help in, it can help maintain a straight path. So again, you know, if it's on the side of me, I can make sure it stays on the side of me. And of course, I want to make sure it stays on the side of me so I don't walk into it. But then based on that traffic, I know where the street is in relation to my body, and I can continue walking straight ahead. Now, again, it can also be a landmark. So it can be a beacon for me to walk toward if I'm looking for the sidewalk near the street, or it can also be just sort of an orientation marker in that if I'm trying to find the building or the front door of my building, I know I can walk away from the traffic. I can put it behind me and walk away from it, knowing that I will eventually get to a building. Okay. Now, traffic is also very helpful when we're looking at intersections. Okay. So as far as crossing a street or an intersection, they might be kind of scary. They might be overwhelming. They might be, well, I don't want to say overwhelming. Let's say intimidating, right? And the interesting thing is we don't always think about it this way, but traffic is your friend. Okay. As long as we know how to understand it. Okay. So if there's a street that I'm trying to cross that's at an intersection with heavy traffic, I can use the traffic on my parallel street to help me cross. So let's just say I'm at the intersection of Hollywood and Vine, okay? And I'm crossing Vine. That would mean that Vine is my perpendicular street, or it's the street that I'm crossing, right? It's in front of me. Now, that would mean that Hollywood is the street to my side, or my parallel street. So for this example, I'm going to say that Hollywood is to my left while Vine is in front of me. Now, again, traffic can be scary. I definitely want to make sure that I'm not in the street while the traffic on Vine is going, right? I want to make sure that my perpendicular traffic is stopped and that it's letting me go, okay? That's my cue that I can go. But if I pay attention to the traffic on Hollywood and I use it as my friend because I understand it pretty well, I know that when that traffic surges and goes straight ahead, I can actually use them as sort of a shield from the perpendicular traffic. Basically, as the traffic on Hollywood goes, as my parallel traffic is going, my perpendicular traffic is going to stop because I'm not big enough to make that traffic stop necessarily, but the traffic in my parallel street is. So again, they kind of act as a shield. So that parallel traffic is going to be my friend. So once they start going, they're getting through the intersection, I know that it's clear for me to also cross Vine because that traffic will be stopped. Okay, so and traffic can definitely be scary. But again, if we understand it, it can be helpful. And of course, how do I know if that traffic is going? By sound. Okay, so as I'm standing at the intersection and I'm waiting, sometimes it takes a while to kind of figure out how the intersection is flowing, but you can listen to determine which cars are stopped and which cars are going. Now you can also stand and listen to the intersection and determine which cars are turning left, which cars are turning right. And of course, that's also how we're going to know, you know, where we are. We can line up and get ready to cross that intersection based on where our traffic is. And of course, we always want to stay on the curb, but we can line ourselves up. We can line ourselves up to cross our perpendicular street by listening to our perpendicular traffic and even using them as our friend to kind of help us determine our line of travel. So if my perpendicular traffic is in front of me and I listen to it go, as I listen to it kind of pass by, I can tell that I can tell that I'm going to cross straight if I hear it directly in front of me. So if the street that I want to cross, if I hear it a little to my right or even a little to my left, that tells me that I might not be crossing as straight as I should be. Okay, so even the perpendicular traffic that we want to avoid can be our friend in that it can help us determine if we're crossing straight or not. Okay, so traffic sounds and the sound of our cane can help us out there with some audio clues. And then, of course, we have sort of sounds of just the general environment. So I know if I'm walking around and I'm looking for, let's just say, the entrance to a restaurant or a building, I might listen for somebody opening the door. I might listen for people talking. And of course, you know, if I don't hear a door opening, but I do hear people talking, I might follow their voices and get some information. I might solicit some information from the people around me. But for the most part, you might hear that door opening and closing. You might also hear parking lots for the buildings that you're looking for, the entrances that you're looking for, because you hear cars kind of slowing down, maybe parking, turning on, speeding up, or pulling out of parking spaces. And of course, traffic is going to be a little slower in a parking lot. So that's going to kind of help determine as well if you are hearing a parking lot or a street. But again, you know, parking lots are generally going to be between you, if you're on the sidewalk, and the building. So you might listen for that as a good tool for orientation to help you find a location. So doors, like I said, you can listen for those to open and close. That's a good factor. And then also sometimes, depending on where you are, you might hear music above the entrance. So if it's a restaurant or maybe even a shop that you're looking for, you might hear that. And then, of course, people talking. And sometimes, again, depending on where you are, if a door is opening and closing, you might not just hear the door opening and closing, but you might also hear a bell or some kind of a ding that kind of lets people know, or the shopkeepers know, that you're that the door's open and someone's coming in. Okay, so there are quite a few sound clues that we can sort of use in our environment. And of course, there are a few tactile clues that we can use as well. Now, another tactile clue that's a little bit bigger is the feeling of air coming from a door. So as we're getting closer to the building that we're looking for, we might feel sort of a waft of air coming through as that door opens and closes. You might also smell something that alerts you to the entrance of a business, or even the type of business that it might be. If it's a bakery, you might smell something really good and tasty. If it's a restaurant, you know, the same. Maybe it's a perfume store or even a clothing store. A lot of the times clothing stores spray scents in them, so that helps you kind of figure out where what type of location it might be. And so, you know, we have some tactile clues. We can rely on sound clues, and we can even rely a little bit on that sense of smell. So,
okay. Yeah. And one of the things I could say too, with the perpendicular traffic, excuse me, if you have the traffic and it's coming from your left shoulder to your right shoulder, again, listening to the idling car. So let's say it's coming from the east going west, and you're on the west side of the street. You can listen to the idling cars that are going from west to east, and you can hear the front car in the line. And so at that point, you can see where that is, listen to where that is, and then determine now that you've got to walk across in front of that far idling car once you get the go ahead with the parallel traffic.
That's true. Yeah. You just, you know, walk and aim yourself between the two sounds, the sound of the moving traffic and then the sound
and
of
idling the traffic.
Stopped traffic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the big cues that we use with our when you're teaching it. And like Joni's talking about a lot of sound cues. One of the places here when we're walking back from one of the busy streets or wherever, right out in front of our residential area, there's a fan. And so if they know that, they realize now that they've made it to the street in front of the center, they can hear the air conditioner blowing and they can have an idea where they are. And now I caution them, because I say sometimes when in our trainings, we do what we call drop-offs, and we drive them around, drop them off, let them work their way back to the center. When students hear that, they go into a panic because they think that we're going to do that within the first week or so, but we don't do that. We give them some time, like a month-ish or whatever, and it depends on how good the student travels. And so then we may drop them off somewhere and they'll start walking and they'll hear a air conditioner vent like that. And so now in their brain, because they know that is in front of the center, they assume that that's it. And then once they turn to go toward the building, then other sounds and clues and things kick in, and then they realize, nope, that's not it. So we use all those kinds of things like that. So
that's a big part of travel in general, is when we start learning to travel, it's sort of a slow build of skills. We provide foundational skills and we sort of move up. So you start to learn skills, but then as you progress, you start feeling more and more comfortable with these skills to the point where you're not 100% actively thinking about them anymore. You're kind of remembering what comes with what, and you become more aware of your environment without even realizing it. So it's definitely a build. We start small and we work our way up.
Once I get a little more, one thing I just wanted to add, I noticed it's really common sense kind of things. Like when you first think about, well, how do blind people travel? You know, people that haven't experienced, it's like, well, I have no idea. It sounds like witchcraft, feeling for the sun. But, you know, it's really a common sense kind of thing. Like even if you don't know which direction the sun is at, you can be walking and know that it's behind you. And so that gives you some idea of where you're at in open space, and just paying attention for some of those different cues that Joni talked about. So it doesn't have to be overly complicated.
Yeah, that's definitely it. Try not, don't complicate it. Just keep it simple.
I saw that a couple of hands went up. Does anybody have questions or anything else to add?
Yes.
Yes, this is Stuart Prost. I see. I'm going to ask the telephone number ending in 7054. You hit *6. I'm going to ask you to unmute. It's *6 to unmute. I'm sorry. Yeah, *6 to unmute.
Yes, this is Pearl, two friends of mine that recited. We went to Chick-fil-A, and I noticed going into the building, there was this large gold metal thing with the bumps on it. And as I ran my cane over it, I asked the ladies, do you know what this is? They said, no. I said, this is for the blind to make you aware that you're about to enter a building on the sidewalk so you know that you're no longer, you know, in the parking area.
So that, those dots, those bumps, they're called truncated domes. And that's true. So they sometimes they are a lot. Most of the time, what those are there for is to kind of alert you to the fact that you are walking or potentially walking into maybe a street crossing or even a crosswalk. And sometimes, yes, they're near buildings and entrances. So depending on where they are, they might be there for different reasons. But the number one thing to remember is that those are there to alert you that there's going to be, again, a texture change or that you might be walking off into a parking lot or a high traffic area. So, yeah, that's true. Quick story. I remember when I first moved to Austin, of course, I grew up in New Mexico where everything's super rural and we don't have a lot of those. And so my dad, you know, came to visit and we were walking down the street and was just really a sort of adorable observation. He saw those and his response was, oh, is this Braille for your feet? But yeah, so those are there to really help you. It's kind of, again, it's an alert to let you know that that there's going to be something there for you to look for. So yeah, very cool.
Yeah, that's funny. We had a student that used to call that street Braille.
Mm-hmm.
She would hit that and she'd go, oh, this is an intersection, but we're at that street Braille. Yeah, so.
Exactly.
We have Alice's iPhone, right?
Okay, an iPhone?
Can you unmute Alice? Because if you can't, it's the lower left corner. There's an unmute button down there somewhere.
Alice, I asked you to unmute, so it may bring up a pop-up that will let you do it.
There you are.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. Okay, so I have several questions. One being negotiating sidewalks. Often there are cracks, potholes, and or different inclines. How do you negotiate those? The second question is having to do with bike traffic, scooter traffic. They have their own lanes now. So you are competing not only with vehicular traffic and pedestrians and anything else that might be an obstruction, but you also now have to consider the scooters and bicycles. This is especially true in Washington, D.C., and that's the area in which I live. The third question I have has to do with electrical vehicles. They don't have any sound, especially when they're idle. And so how does the traveling, negotiating with your cane now, has the rules changed or will the rules change? Is there a tactical way to negotiate traveling when you're dealing with vehicles that are electrical?
Good questions. All right. So let's start with the first question about sort of potholes and cracks and sort of the sidewalks in general. With cracks and potholes, those are tough, okay? Because sometimes depending on your cane arc, if you're using a two-point touch, you may not always find them. And especially, I know sometimes I have my balance is off a little bit. And so it might be harder to recover from those kinds of things. So generally, what I'll suggest is that you use a constant contact method. So constant contact is when instead of tapping the cane from side to side, that you're just kind of you're sort of swiping the cane left and right on the ground. So it's always in contact with the ground. Okay, so that's going to help you find those kind of inconsistencies a little more easily. Now, you, of course, always want to make sure that you're covering your entire body. So you're actually making it so that the tip of your cane covers an area that's wider than your shoulders. Excuse me.
Okay.
And then definitely that constant contact, okay? Because that's going to help you, again, catch those inconsistencies in the sidewalk a little bit more easily. Now, of course, while you're doing that, you're also going to slow down in pace, okay? So naturally,
okay,
when we tap our canes, that sort of allows us to go a little faster. When we're, you know, doing constant contact, we're slowing down sort of automatically because our cane, when we're...
Does the tip have any, make a difference, the roller tip compared to the metal tip, or
yes,
does it not matter?
It does make a difference. And so a couple of differences that you're going to find is that, so the metal tip is a lot lighter, so that's going to be so much easier for two-point touch. Okay. Now, okay, the roller tips sometimes are a little easier when it comes to that constant contact because they do roll. And now if you have a difficulty feeling changes in the, you know, the ground, like let's just say the second part of your question, you know, finding those uneven sidewalks, sometimes your roller tips, since they're a little bit heavier, they might actually, you know, make it easier to feel those, you know, drops or even the unlevel kind of ground. And because, again, they're a little heavier, so they're not necessarily good for constant contact, but I'm sorry, they're not good for two-point touch, but they're good for constant contact and for making those changes more easy to feel. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, it does. Thanks.
So so one of the things we talked a little bit about that kind of stuff the other day, and there's the fact that one of the things that we were talking about is one of the key things is, you know, literally making sure that you're picking your feet up, and then that, when you're using constant contact, if you're using one of the metal glide tips, the con to that is that you better have a lot of extra tips, because if you travel a fair amount, that tip is rubbing on the cement is like rubbing a piece of sandpaper on wood, so it's going to wear it down, and it's going to end. You're going to lose that tip. And I've seen people that travel a lot wear a tip out in 2 weeks, literally. So the constant contact is where the roller tip, and you can do it again with the metal tip, but you definitely want to have spares. Interesting. I was just in DC last month, and nice wide sidewalks in the downtown area where I was. And now here we've been having to, it seems like it's kind of calmed down, but for a while there, we were dealing with the scooters.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, we still are.
We still are.
Now the scooters, like our downtown area, the sidewalks are not as wide as they are in DC where I was at. And so at every almost at the end of the block, in the middle of the block, you're going to run into at least 75 scooters. Just, and so the problem is that when you know you're downtown, what I would do, and I would just tell my students now in the area that we would train, is at this point you are going to probably have to do kind of a an extended pencil grip to be aware, because if those guys come scooting around and it catches your cane, you're going to want to do two things. Have a good grip on your cane, but a fairly loose grip. So when that thing hits it and you know you can't pull it away from them, you just got to let it go. And then mm-hmm. shuffle step to find it, or the general public's maybe going to help you find it. But that's kind of how we deal with it. We just gotta, you know, deal with it. And
but is there any strategies when it comes to crossing streets when you have to deal with the vehicular traffic in addition to the bicycle traffic, because they have their own lanes and that's, they usually run perpendicular to the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
They don't necessarily follow the traffic laws like a car would.
Right. You have to be really listening. So one thing that I would like,
because they're, you know, getting in this better common age, that's what people are doing with gas prices. They're using scooters and bicycles more.
Yeah,
so
with the
area.
With the designated bike lane, okay, I'm kind of I do different things. I do things differently. So I would have my student cross the bike lane, stand on the edge of the bike lane so that the bikes are going behind them and the traffic is in front of them, and then make that crossing at the correct time.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes depending on how the bike lanes are set up, because sometimes, like, I've seen in different cities where the bike lane is separated actually by a small median. So those are easy to find. And then sometimes they're just separated by a painted line. So, you know, you've got to really make sure that you're comfortable with your traffic when doing that. But yeah, like Winford's saying, you know, one thing that's interesting is if you're using your perpendicular traffic. If you're using your parallel traffic to cross a street, generally speaking, the bikes that are coming toward you in that perpendicular lane are going to have to stop too, because they can't cross the parallel lane either, as long as that traffic is going. So that's a good cover for all. That's a good cover for both traffic, you know, vehicular traffic and, you know, bike and scooter traffic. Now, fortunately, people are becoming more and more considerate. So I found that a lot of times, and this is unfortunately, again, it's not always, but a lot more. What happens is individuals who are on bikes or on scooters will actually call out as they're approaching you and say, like, I'm coming on your right or left. Sometimes just the fact that they're saying something is the best thing to sort of follow their sound cue, because they might say I'm on your left, but really they're on your right. And so you want to make sure more than anything that you're listening to where they are rather than, you know, taking what they're saying 100%. But I think each area is going to sort of depend on how you approach it based on sort of the situation.
Are you guys taking more questions? Because I got two more hands.
Oh, yes.
Here. We
yes,
do.
For sure.
And then just really quick, again, to address like the vehicle, the quiet car thing. I'm not sure, and Liz or Curtis, you might be able to answer this.
The old electric cars are still going to be quiet because we haven't populated the system. The thing that's saving us is that the majority of vehicles are still combustion engines, right?
Exactly, they're hybrid.
But the new cars will make noise even when they idle, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, you can't count on every electric vehicle mm-hmm. to do that.
And this so, for the best, I'm sorry, let me just add this one last thing. The best thing to do at that point is to follow the other traffic around you, because of course we can't necessarily hear, and I don't mean follow, I mean rely on the other traffic around you, because you know, if we're waiting to cross a parking lot, or I'm sorry, a driveway, and if there is a quiet car, you know, waiting to pull out of that driveway, Well, we can still use the perpendicular, I'm sorry, the parallel traffic going by us to sort of shield us from that car, you know, turning into the street. Because of course they can't move into the street if a car is driving by. So, you know, I would say like the best strategy for approaching those situations is to, if you cannot hear those cars, just always pay attention to those sound cues and what that, you know, what the traffic around you is doing so that you know that you're covered.
This is Judy. I just want to add quickly that the ones you don't have to worry about are the ones that aren't moving because they're not going to hit you.
Exactly.
You want to use your cane and don't worry if you hit the car. And also, I just want people to be aware that the reason these cars are going to start making noise that they didn't used to have to make is because the National Federation of the Blind provided the impetus for Congress to make it illegal for them not to make sound. So we make a difference in this world.
Exactly. Yeah.
Here we have a couple of questions. I'm going to ask Dana Ard to unmute. Dana, can you unmute?
Alt A if you're in Windows, Command Shift A for the Mac.
Looks like she's on a computer.
Or star six.
No, she's on a computer.
She's on a computer, yeah.
But it's not working.
Do we have anyone? Can you? Oh, you can't unmute her, can you?
No,
we can't.
I sent a request to unmute so that
Alice's iPhone could. Try to unmute.
I'm ask you to unmute.
Well, no, Alice just spoke. I think you need her hand in.
There's a Shelly Koppel.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. You can unmute.
Shelly.
It's Shelly. Shelly, yeah.
Everybody's having trouble.
Okay.
She just unmuted. Yeah.
There she is.
Yeah, good. Go ahead.
Shelly's here. My thought on some of this was just, now, I've never dealt with the scooters and some bike stuff, but just don't ever hesitate to wait a few minutes. If you're ever uncertain about your sound of your traffic and what's going on, there's no crime in waiting a few minutes to make sure that you're hearing everything that you're supposed to be hearing. Now, the scooter thing sounds a little different. I've not encountered a whole lot of that, but that was always something we did, is just even stand there to hear all the traffic parallel and perpendicular and kind of figure it out and feel comfortable with it. So anyway,
that is a very good piece of advice. There's no point or there's nothing wrong with waiting and just making sure that you're 100% safe. It's always better to be a little bit late than
that's exactly unsafe. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Thank you. You do. Yeah.
Zoom meeting audio now unmuted.
There you go.
I got it.
Yay.
I'm sorry. I was getting this is Dana Ard. I'm sorry. I was getting this message that said Frank Loza has joined the meeting every time I hit Alt A. And I'm like, I don't give a rat's that he's joined the meeting. I want to get unmuted for crying out loud. And then it said, got it. And I finally hit.
And Dana, you better make your point before
you question.
Very fast.
Yeah.
My question is this. I missed the bit about the sun, and I was never taught to use the sun. I was told not to. But what I don't know, I know the sun rises in the east, sets in the west, but I don't know where it goes the rest of the day. So when I feel the sun, I'm not sure where direction I am going if I use the sun.
So. That's a really good point. And you know, the sun, well, I mean, there are multiple techniques out there for the just straight up, because not every technique is always going to work at every single point in time. Right. And the sun is one of those, because if it's a rainy day, well, that's not going to help me at all. Right. But you provide a good point about it, you know, rising in the east and setting in the west, and then where is it the rest of the day? So because of where we are in the, you know, we're in the northern hemisphere, and basically even during the noon hour, it's never, it's not going to always, well, really, it's not going to be exactly right above you. It kind of goes from east to like southeast to kind of south, and then kind of it starts going kind of north into the west, right? So basically, if it's not, yes, the sun does, exactly. Yeah. So in the morning, it's going to mostly be east, and then as it continues through the sky until, you know, about 11-ish, you're still gonna kind of find it more toward the east. And then around noontime, where you find it is probably going to be closer to more southward, and then as it gets later, it's going to kind of float back to the west. Now, I'm saying that like, oh my gosh, it's so easy, and that's not always true. So especially when you're starting to use that sun, a lot of practice is going to be involved, because of course you want to 100% make sure that you're truly able to feel it. And then also, you know, kind of have an idea of where it is based on the time of day. So I would say, you know, start with just kind of going out in front of your house or, you know, your apartment complex and in an area that you're familiar with, and just kind of noticing where it is at any point in the day, you know. And of course, you can, you know, have someone with you to kind of help you out, give you some direction, or, you know, if you know that the front of your house, your front door faces north, then go out and kind of feel where it is at different points of the day, so you can become comfortable with that technique. Cause the last thing you want to do is, you know, start relying on it when you're not 100% sure.
I've been traveling for 55 years about. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't think I'm going to start relying on it. I just needed the information. So for and I travel a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. And one of the things, like Joni said, what I tell my students is between 8 and 11:30-ish in the east, 11:30-ish to 2:30-ish is in the southern part of the sky. And then after that, it's in the west. And I tell them, it's a rainbow, but it's tilted.
Exactly.
Over, it doesn't go over the top of your head, but it goes over the back of your head. So it's a tilted rainbow. And that's, so if you can look at the time, check the sun. Okay, the sun's in the whatever. Once you learn in your area, or even when you go, like when I went to DC the last month, I had a friend of mine that used to live there, and she was telling me about the quadrants, the northeast and southwest and all that. And she was explaining how the numbered streets, north, south, and the lettered streets go east, west.
Mm-hmm.
And so from that, then I was able to get a really good idea. And so that's the things that you kind of use. Exactly. along with the sun.
This is Judy. We have about 5 minutes left. And, you know, one of the things you can do to practice with the sun is when you leave your house, you know the directions, or you should, you know whether your street goes east and west. Mm-hmm. So when you are facing west, say, okay, where is the sun right now? So if I go to another street, that's going to be west. It's going to work on another street. So there's where you can practice.
Correct. Yep.
Mm-hmm. At your own
house. Have a question from a phone number ending in 206.
Hi, this is Judy. I have a comment and then a couple of questions. I'll try to make it quick. I'm very new and inexperienced with cane travel, but one thing an on instructor and told me is whenever I'm going to cross anywhere, a street or anything, he said, always have the cane going straight across my body at an angle. So everybody around sees it, it's in plain sight, knows that I have vision problems and that I'm a cane user. That's my comment. Couple questions. One, didn't the National Federation of the Blind, don't they also have a legislation on the table to force the owners of these scooters to have docking stations? And by, I think, I don't remember what year it is, they will no longer be able, you can't leave them just laying in the street anywhere. You have to take them back to a docking station. I thought that's what I remembered. And my next question, in terms of walking outside, there is a shopping center that I go to. It's outside, but there are stairs. You know, walking along outside and suddenly comes the stairs. Mm-hmm. And I'm intimidated by, mm-hmm. by stairs, whether they're inside, outside, or whatever. I have not learned how do you negotiate stairs using your cane. How would I? I've been there enough till now I can anticipate it. But if I had never been there before, how would I know watch out for the concrete stairs?
That's a really good question. So I'm going to start with stairs and then we'll kind of move to the legislation stuff. The stairs definitely work with your O&M instructor a little bit more on that, because of course, again, it's practice that's going to help you out, right? But that's also one of those cases, whether it's stairs or a curb or any uneven surface, you always want to make sure that you're using good cane technique. So as long as your cane is extended out in front of you good ways and you're covering your body, you're going to find those stairs. And so you're going to feel that drop of the cane when there's something there. And then the best thing to do is anchor to that stair. So basically you're going to maintain contact with that edge, or you're going to actually, you can move your cane tip so that it's on in front of basically it's on the step that would be that you would step down onto. Okay. And so you can maintain contact with that step and then just kind of keep your cane there and walk up to it slowly until you find that step with your foot. Okay. And until you're ready to actually take the step down. And of course that requires, you know, like you said, if you're intimidated, sometimes you might feel like your balance is off, or maybe you're just not comfortable with your balance that day or where you're going to step. So you can use your cane to kind of probe the step, or, you know, the step that you're going to move down onto to make sure there's nothing there, or that you have an exact spot to put your foot on and you're comfortable enough. And then, of course, you know, you can also find a railing. You know, you can follow the edge of the stair to maybe find the railing or the wall that you can hold on to as you're going down to help with support. But definitely, you know, you want to work with your instructor to really help you out with that until you feel comfortable, you know. And like you said, when they kind of come around, you really just want to make sure you're using that good technique so that even if you don't know that they're there, you'll be sure to find them rather than, you know, hurt yourself on them.
This is Judy. We're gonna have to stop, I think. Did you want to say one more thing, Winfred?
I just had one question that I had for the lady is, one, this can make a huge difference. And that is if the length of your cane is theoretically below your chin,
mm-hmm.
If the shorter the cane is, the less warning you're going to get when you hit that step. So if you have a cane that's sternum high or shoulder high, you might want to get it like chin high. So when you hit the step, your cane tip finds it, click, and then you have at least one, two steps to walk up to it into a pencil grip and anchor your cane. So
exactly.
That's the thing I would to say.
And then one last thing, safety wise, y'all, just, you know, don't use your long white cane for balance. Okay. Because it might not hold you up. That's not what it's designed for. So always find a railing or a wall when possible, because that cane it may actually harm you more than hurt you if you try to use it for balance.
Okay. I think we can stop the recording if one of you would do that, and say thank you so much to Joni and Winfred.